Okay. So we are holding on Chof on the base about 15 lines from the bottom, line against Mahu.
Oh, yeah, we didn't get that.
Yeah, we didn't quite get to the two dots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're in the middle of talking about the Mishnah had given us rules that you can't put a bakery or a dyer's shop under somebody else's storehouse because either the smoke according to Rashi or the heat according to Tosfos will ruin the contents of the oitzer. But we said that if you had a refes bakar, we said also not a stable, but we said if you had any of those things there first and afterwards the other guy built his oitzer, then you're allowed to leave it over there. You don't have to remove it now that he made his oitzer. So we started asking, the last thing we had was Abaya asked a bunch of questions that all boiled down to, a number of them boiled down to, what happens if we see the other guy is preparing to make an oitzer over there? Is that enough?
He's preparing
to make an oitzer. He swept and mopped the place, for example, or he made larger windows. And then we had a couple of cases. What about, for example, if there's an achsadra or an extra floor in between them where you could argue that the heat or the smoke will dissipate by the time it reaches your oitzer? And we said in all those cases, take root. Which, by the way, I mentioned yesterday the two different opinions among Rishonim what teku means over here, and I got one of them wrong. The Rambam is correctly, I got it correct that the Rambam says that you shouldn't do it l'chatchila, but if you did, then the other guy, the owner of the oitzer upstairs, doesn't have the ability to make you close up your bakery or whatever. The other opinion is the Rosh, who says that given that it's teku, it's only a suffix, whether you can't do it, go ahead and do it. It's a teku, we can't tell you not to do it because there's the possibility that maybe it's allowed.
Not
no, it's not so obvious. You would think maybe it's a suffix. Adrabba, the Rambam holds because it's a suffix, and after all, Midorais, you're not allowed to cause hezek to somebody else.
Well, that's
then
usually
therefore,
with the taker you do.
Usually,
the
it means that usually the Rambam says with a taker, yeah, it means you shouldn't do it, but if you did it, then what's done is
so
done.
What's
kind
the taker then if you say you don't do it?
So according to the Rosh, then it means, go ahead and do it. Not Machchila, but whatever. It wouldn't be the right thing to do, but you're allowed to do it. We can't prevent you from doing it Machchila. Unlike according to the Rambam, we can prevent you from doing it Machchila, but if you already did it, then it's a done deal.
Why, according to Rambam, we can prevent you?
Because not we can prevent you. You shouldn't do it l'chatchila because we're not sure. Maybe you're not allowed to. However, if you already went and did it, then fine. We can't prevent you. We can't make you take it apart.
But teku rule.
Teku means that we're not sure. So therefore, we're not good. We're not sure. So therefore, on that basis, you might be a mazik. You're not allowed to be a mazik. Therefore, you're not allowed to do it l'chatchila. You're not allowed to l'chatchila according to the Rambam. Go and do something that potentially might be a hazard.
There's no logic here.
But there is that is very logical.
No,
don't do something where you're not sure if it's going to be a hezek, especially if we say that being a mazik is deraita. But that's how it is. That's how the Rambam has it. That's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch.
And
the suffix that can't be.
And if there's a suffix,
and because
you
of the suffix,
cannot be chayav.
We can't make you take it down once you already
if
put it up. But we can prevent you from putting it in the book. That's what it means.
Suffix
deraisa l'chumra. This is the suffix deraisa.
L'chumra.
L'chumra meaning don't do it l'chatchila. Meaning,
the Rambam
is saying that you're not allowed, if, for example, this guy swept and mopped upstairs, at that point, you are not allowed to make
it.
No, that's midoraisa, according to the Rambam, because now, potentially, because if we consider that it's considered making a hezek to his oitzer, you are not allowed midoraisa to be a mazik. Therefore, you are not allowed to make your refes bakar or whatever downstairs. However, if you did at that point, after we swept and mopped, before you brought anything in there, then we can't force you to take out your refes. Boy Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua. So now Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua asks a similar question. Tamri Vidimoni Mai. What happens if the person brought in there, let's say, dates or pomegranates? So Rashi explains the point of the question is, maybe we consider it to be an oitzer only if you have in it things like grain or wine or oil. Maybe tamri v'rimoni is not considered an oitzer. Different other Rishonim talk about different other possibilities. It may mean that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains, for example, these things are things that the tamri v'rimoni are things where the heat or the smoke or whatever is not going to harm them. So therefore, maybe you could say that, look, on the one hand, he put in there tamri v'rimoni. He obviously intends from now on to use it as a storehouse. He may yet take those things out and put in grain, for example. Therefore, you can't have your refes or what have you there. Or maybe not. The fact of the matter is these things are not going to be damaged by the heat. Therefore, it's not a problem.
take
also? So again, take again, same thing. According to the Rambam, you shouldn't do a lachatchila. At lachatchila, but
right,
because he's not spelling out there, right? The Mefarshim, the point. That's the implication. The Rambam just said you're not allowed to do it, but if you did it, we can't force you to take it out. Mefarshim on the Rambam, I think in particular, the Vilna Gaon, explained that the underlying basis of that is that the Rambam may hold that it's a suffix deraisa, and therefore you have to go lachomer.
And the Rosh must hold it's a suffix.
The Rosh must hold that it's a suffix deraisa only. Then the Mishnah continued, Be'emes b'yayin hitiru chulu, that in truth, which is always how we introduce something that's halacha l'moshe b'tzinah, an unquestioned halacha. B'yayin hitiru chulu, we said with wine, it is mutter to have if a guy has wine upstairs, you're allowed to have a bakery or a dyer's shop downstairs because the heat or whatever isn't going to harm it. So now we learn in a b'raisa, B'yayin hitiru m'pnesha mashbicha. No, B'yayin hitiru m'pnesha mashbicha. They allowed it with wine because whatever it is downstairs, the heat or the smoke, as the case may be, will improve it. That's the thing. So Rashi says the problem is the smoke. That's what Tosfos asked. We mentioned yesterday
that. The heat will harm the wine?
Apparently not. But we'll see. Wait, there's different kinds of wines. Wait. But Tosfos asks that if it can't mean smoke because smoke does harm wine. We know that. That's why Tosfos explains that it's heat. Below refes baka, however, even with wine, even when there's wine upstairs, as opposed to anything else, you still can't have a barn, a cattle barn downstairs, because it makes the wine smell. It gives it a bad smell. Amar Rav Yosef, hay gidan, however, when it comes to our wine, the pashtus, it means wine in chutzlar. The Taz wants to say that maybe it means wine after the korban, even in Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, he says, afilu kutra d'shraga nami kashile. Even the smoke of a candle, even a tiny amount of smoke, is bad for wine. And therefore, if you're in Chutz La'aretz, or according to the Taz, even nowadays, even in Eretz Yisrael, you would not be allowed to have a bakery or whatever downstairs of an oitzer of wine because the smoke will ruin it.
And why now rather than during the time of the Bais
Hamikdash? Because according to the Taz's understanding, wine during the time of the Bais Hamikdash was of higher quality. The Gemara itself mentioned elsewhere that the quality of wine in Eretz Yisrael went down after the Korban. But the standard explanation is we mean Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz. Amar Rav Sheshes, v'aspasta kerefes bakar damya. And Rav Sheshes says also if you store aspasta, which is hay, downstairs, on the downstairs apartment, that's also like a refes bakar in the sense that also it's moist and therefore there's heat and smell or whatever from it, and therefore it's the same problem having that downstairs when it's there as well.
What was an aspasta?
Aspasta is hay.
Oh.
Yeah. Elsewhere we've learned a different alfalfa. Possibility that aspasta might be alfalfa. Yeah, whatever it is, some kind of grass that's used for animal food, yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Chanrus Shabachotzer, if somebody has a store in one of their apartments, in one of the houses, in a chotzer, Yochol Limchis B'yadei, other people, or even one individual person in the chotzer, can object, V'loy Maloy, and tell them, Eini Yochol Lishan, Mikol Nachnasin, Mikol Ayotin, I can't sleep because of the noise of people going in and out. Move your store elsewhere. Aval, Oysa Kalim, Yotzer, Mocha B'Sech HaShuk, however, somebody who manufactures Kalim, or weaves or whatever is allowed to do that in his house.
There.
He's allowed to do that in his house and then go out and sell it in the marketplace. The Eina Yochol Limchis B'yadei, and in that case, if the person is manufacturing things at home, the other neighbors cannot object the loymaloy and to say Eina Yochol Lishan loymikol patish loymikol rechai. And he can't say, for example, you're hammering with a hammer. I can't sleep because of that or because of the noise of your mill of your millstones if you're grinding loymikol latinokus or because of the noise of the children. What children? The initial assumption is going to be in the Gemara. We're talking about children who come to buy things in the store, which is what the Gemara is going to take up in a second. The Mefarshim have a big question. Why would we say that you can complain about the noise of, you can complain and say, I can't sleep because of the noise of people going in and out, but you can't complain because of the noise of the hammering? Isn't that a lot more intrusive? So they give a few different answers. Rashi himself says the difference is that the noise and the hammering is something that the person himself who lives there is doing. Fine, he has the right to be doing something that will disturb others on his own. The Nechnasin and Yotzin are people who come from elsewhere. They're people who come in from the streets or from other Mavoyas or whatever into the Chotzer to buy. That they have a right to object to. Many other Rishonim say it's not really so much that. It's not even so much the matter of the noise of the people coming in and out. It's more the fact all the extra foot traffic. You have to dodge them. You have to get by them. There's more hezekriah. So even though the Mishnah, according to them, even though the Mishnah uses the word mikolah, nafnasa, mikolah yotzin, it's not really so much the noise. It's really just the extra foot traffic is considered objectionable.
About Rashi, you have certain noises that you get used to at night. like if your neighbor was hammering.
Indeed.
Like, it wouldn't really bother you after a few days.
There is that.
But then I think new people.
So it is interesting, actually, that Rambam has an understanding somewhat like that. But Rambam understands the distinction that the person who is, for example, hammering or grinding or whatever it is, he's already made a chazak on it. He's done it for a certain amount of time. Nobody objected. Fine. Then, therefore, he's allowed to continue doing it. So even if a new neighbor moves in, he's not allowed to object anymore. Mashenkin and Echnosin and Yotin is considered, even if he already has a chazak on it, it's still considered the kind of thing, which we'll learn much later at the end of the third parak, we'll learn there's certain kinds of things which you can never establish a chazakah on. Even if you had a chazakah for doing it for years, eventually the other neighbor can say, you know what, I can't take it anymore. And chazakah for certain kinds of nezakin. Smoke, a basic kisa, certain things like that. We'll learn at the end of Cheskes about it. Yeah, so that's the Rambam's explanation of it. There's other explanations also. Another interesting one which is brought in Shulchan Aruch is that there's a difference between something you're doing in your house versus something that you're doing in the chotzer. The hammering or whatever you're doing in your house, you have the right to do pretty much whatever you want in your house. This is out of the Ramah brings this in Shulchan Aruch. Mashenkin and the Chotzer, they have more of a right to object. The Ramah does say, though, I mean, if you have, for example, people in the area who are sick, for example, then show a little consideration for them and don't be hammering quite so loud. But under normal circumstances, yeah, as long as it's something that's a reasonable thing to do in your house, then you're allowed to do it.
Didn't you just frame the ratio to say that Chanash of a Chotzer meant in one's own Rishot, but they share a Chotzer?
No, but the Nechnosin and the Yotzin are going out in and out in the Chotzer. Therefore, the people, fine, we can't object to you having a Chanus in your house, but the fact of the matter is it's causing foot traffic in the Chotzer, and that we can object to.
So theoretically, if they could disappear when they get to the Chotzer and then reappear magically when they get to the
Chotzer. Yeah, or whatever. Let's say if he has a back entrance directly into his house.
Oh,
okay. So the Chotzer, maybe. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mishnah Reisha, Mishnah Sefer. So, okay, what's the difference between the Reisha and the Sefer? That first was saying that not about the business about the hammers or whatever. Fine, we talked about the various answers that the Rishonim give for that. But if we assume that the Tinoikas in the Sefer are children who are coming to buy at the store, then what's the difference? In the Reisha, you're saying that the foot traffic of people coming to your store is bothersome. But in the Sefer, you can't say that the noise of the children is bothersome. What's the difference? Sabai says, you're right, the sefer must be talking about if you have somebody who is in another chotzer. So you have different mafarshim talk about, does it mean, for example, that you have, let's say, in the neighboring chotzer, somebody has a store, and you're still arguing that the noise of the children is carrying from your chotzer into mine. That's not a valid argument. Or it can be the other way around. You can have somebody from another chotzer is coming and opening a store in your chotzer. Maybe you don't have the ability to argue against that. Fine, and the Mishnah should explicitly say so, that if it's a different chotzer, it's mutter. Ella Amar Rava, said Rava says no. When we say tinoikis in the Mishnah, we're not talking. So, well, he says that's not what the Mishnah means.
Right.
Mind you, I mean, later on we'll see in the Gemara, it's not that Rava disagrees with the principle that Abaye
right.
is saying. Fine, the principle is a valid principle.
Yeah,
however, it's not what the Mishnah means.
Right.
The Mishnah means something else. When we say tinoikis, it's not talking about children who come to shop at the store. The tinoikas we're talking about in the Mishnah is the noise of children who are coming to learn by Malamed. So usually you would have the ability to say, I don't want people coming from the outside to buy at your store or whatever. But if they're children coming to learn at a school, at a Malamed, that's different. And therefore, this Mishnah applies after the Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla that there should be schools everywhere. What was the history of that? In truth, this person should be remembered for good. Yeshua ben Gamla Shmai, his name was Yeshua ben Gamla. If it weren't for him, the Torah would have been forgotten by the Jewish people. Who is this Yeshua ben Gamla, by the way? Tosfos says, there's a different Gemara we learned in Yevamos that mentions a Yeshua ben Gamla whose wife, Marta Bas Baitus, gave a huge bribe for him to become the Kohen Gadol. Tosfos says it's the same one.
Yeah.
So therefore, so we're saying over here he's tzaddik, on the face of it over there, what are we saying? He bought his way into the Kohen Gadol is not a good thing. Tosfos says maybe the fact of the matter is, okay, there were better qualified people than him. His wife shouldn't have bought the Kohen Gadol for him. But the fact of the matter is, he in himself he was a good person. It's just there were better qualified candidates for Kohen Gadol. Not really, but okay. Different other Mefarshim talk about different possibilities. That among others, there are Mefarshim who learn that there were actually two different Yeshua ben Gamlas.
Right.
Historically, it seems that there may have been two. There was one
well,
in the time of Shimon ben Shatak, and there was another one close to the time of the Korban.
his wife died in the korban bias.
That's not necessarily the same matter as bias. Yeah.
Right. Well, but according to one, it is.
Well, the thing is, actually, there's
I mean, did he establish the schools before the korban bias?
So that's the thing. There's a Yerushalmi that mentions this concept of the schools and attributes it to Shimon ben Shatach. So that makes better sense based on the Gemara there in Yevamos that mentions Yeshua ben Gamla in connection with Yanai HaMelech, that he paid his wife paid off Yanai HaMelech to make him Kohen Gadol. Yanai HaMelech is in the same time as Shimon ben Shatach. So then it makes sense that Yeshua ben Gamla and Shimon ben Shatach together worked on it. If you say that it's the Yeshua ben Gamla was a few years before the Churban, that's 100-odd years after Shimon ben Shatach.
Tosafot seems to say that, listen, this was a Tammany government, and that's how you had to be appointed. He was a Tzadik Gomer, however.
That's basically it. Okay. Anyway, so what happened? How did Yeshua ben Gamla make that the Torah should not be forgotten by the Jewish people? Originally, the rule was like this. If a person has a father, then his father teaches him Torah. But if a person doesn't have a father, then he doesn't learn Torah. My Jewish, now how did they get to such a situation? What pasuk did they dash in to see that that's the way it should be? Because the pasuk says, ulamadtem oisam, which can also be understood as ulamadtem atem, that you should teach you that you should teach your children. Vilimadtem oisam, you should teach them, which also implies vilimadtem atem, you personally should be teaching them. As b'nechem. Okay. Later on, they saw that's not working out. So they made a takana and said that we'll set up there will be teachers for children in Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. Now, why up at Yerushalayim? My Jewish can be seen take the Torah, because like the pasuk says, Torah should come out from Tzion. And Tosafot says there was a good reason behind it. You come to Yerushalayim, you see the Kedusha of the Beis Mikdash, you see the Kohenim doing the Avodah, that brings you the child to a much greater Yiras Shemayim. And in fact, the Chassam Sofer says not just the child, but the teacher also has a great deal more Yiras Shemayim, and then it affects the students. So therefore, they figured Yerushalayim is the best place for that. However, v'adayin mishiyesh le'ab hayamalo malamdoi, fine, but you still have the situation was if a child has a father, then he would bring him to Yerushalayim and teach him. Mishayin le'ab lo'ayolo v'lamed, if somebody doesn't have a father, he wouldn't go up to Yerushalayim. There's nobody to take him there, so therefore he wouldn't end up learning. Hiskinu, so they made another takana. Shiyum eshivin b'chol pelach opelach, they made a takana that they should set up teachers in every district. Pelach is, Rashi describes it, having medinus for Pelach Echad. There's many, many, many countries, like many, many city-states sort of in one Pelach.
Guberin.
So, yeah, like a Guberin. It might be like, for example, Pelach. Yeah, whatever. Pelach might be the equivalent like of a county or something, let's say. Okay. However, they would only have the children come to learn in these district schools when they were 16 or 17. Why that old? Marshall says because when they're littler than that, as we're going to see in the Gemara later, you can't really make them travel from one city to another. It's not like they have buses.
They should come.
Well, you can't beat young children too much. So
they're older.
However, the problem was the problem is that then by that time a child was already almost too old to be disciplined. So if the teacher gets angry at the child, mavit boiviyotin, and the kid would just kick the rebbe and leave. It could be either one, I don't know. Ad Shabbo Yeshua ben Gamla v'tikin, until Yeshua ben Gamla came and made a takana, Shiyum eshivin melamda tinokas v'chol medina v'nino v'chol ir v'ir, that you should have children set up in every medina, which is smaller than a pelach, and in every large city, or even maybe even every small city. Medina is a large city, ir is a smaller city. And you start bringing them to cheder when they're 6 or 7 years old.
Why did we need to wait for that? It wasn't obvious. The Torah says Ben Chamesh Lemikra.
So what's Ben Chamesh Lemikra? Tosfos asks on that. Right. The original thing was the father would teach them. Tosfos asks on Ben Chamesh Lemikra. Tosfos' answer is that maybe, for example, we learn in Ksubas that 6 or 7, similar to our Gemara over here, 6 for a healthy child, 7 for a weaker child. Right. Maybe 5. And Pirkei Avos is meant for an exceptionally strong child who can already start cheder at 5 years old. Different others are showing him talk about different possibilities, and the Alter Rebbe in Hilchos Talmud Torah explains that what it is yes. Up till 5, the father is teaching the child. In particular, Ben Chomish Lemikra, at 5, he's teaching him how to read Chomish, how to read the Aleph Beis and the Kodesh, the whatever, and then you start him in actual cheder, you start him in a class at 6 or 7. And that was the Takana. So now the Gemara is going to tell us some rules about Chadorim and about Melamdim. Amalei Rav le Rav Shmuel bar Shilas ad shis loy tekabel. The Rav says to Rav Shmuel bar Shilas, who, as we learned back in the first parak, was a teacher. He was a melamed and a very devoted one. We learned over there about how he hadn't been in his garden for 13 years, and now for the first time he's there, and he's still thinking about his talmidim. The Rav tells him like this: ad shis loy.
Dream about us at night.
Ad shis loy tekabel. I'm not a melamed of children. If I was, then yeah, I should be that devoted. But anyway, okay. So. And shis loy tekabel. Rav tells him, up till the child is 6 years old, don't accept him into your cheder. He's too little. Mikan ve'elach kabel. After that, though, you should accept him. But ask filei ketorah and feed him, give him torah to eat and drink. Bal korcho, Rashi says, like ask ketorah, give it to him like you put a yoke on an ox's neck, like even against his will. In Ksugas, where this Gemara is also brought, Rashi explained it differently, that it meant stuff him with turtle like the way you stuff an ox with food. Which Marsha explains that that's the point. We're gonna say the Gemara over there in Ksugas says that only at 12 if the kid is not learning, do you really start forcing him. Up until that point, you have to be a little more gentle with him. So therefore, like, because the Gemara says that's why Marsha explains. Better to use the explanation in Ksugas. You give him the food, you don't stuff it down his throat like the way you do with other animals. You just put a lot of food in front of him, like you do for an ox. You put a lot of turtle in front of him, but it's still up to him to actually take it. Also, Rav tells Rav Shmuel Bashilas, another instruction for Rebbe, if you have to hit a child, you should only hit him with a strap of a shoe, with a shoelace, which is like a very light thing. You think of it like you hear in the old stories of like a teacher would whack a student on the knuckles with a ruler, something like that.
You used to have big rulers.
No, we're not talking about that. Come on.
It's like
this table. Yeah. But I'm put it like this. You know, you don't hit him makas zori, you don't hit him in a cruel way, like a shotim, like a makel. Elevator to a kana, just with a small strap.
He hit the table like five times before they came to
him. Yeah. Okay. Next, he tells him, Dekori Kori, any child who's reading properly in class, any child who's participating in class, good, Kori, then he's reading, he's doing good. Deloy Kori, if a kid doesn't want to learn, what you should do is put him in partnership with another child. So Rashi explains, in other words, don't try to force it on him. Don't kick him out of the school. Just let him sit with the other children. Eventually, he'll start paying attention. Marsha explains a different nuance in it also. If you have a kid who's not really interested in being in class, if you send him out or whatever, the other kids are going to end up following him. Better let him stay in class and sit together with the other kids, and then eventually something will penetrate, rather than you send him out and all the other kids are going to want to go and be wild like him.
Salman, what's your answer to that?
Okay. All right. So those are some basic instructions as far as melamdim. Now, getting back to what do we say at the top of the Amud? Rava had said that the tinokas of our Mishnah is talking about tinokas shabbos rabban, children who are learning in cheder. So therefore, because of the importance of learning Torah in every place, therefore the Bnei Chaser don't have the ability to complain and say, but the noise is too much for us. So now, the Gemara says, Maisi, I have a contradiction to that. A Braisa says, Echad b'Bnei Chaser should be kishlachas roife, uman v'gardi, or malamet tenekes. If a person living in a Chaser wants to become a doctor, or uman, Rashi says means a bloodletter, the gardi, or a weaver, where people are always coming to him to have clothes made, or melamed tinokos, or a teacher of children. In all those cases, b'nei chaser ma'akvin olav. The members of the other people in the chaser are able to prevent him from that because they can say, we don't want foot traffic, we don't want the whatever. So we see that if a person wants to become a melamed,
what would that imply?
A roifer would be a general doctor.
But he would bring people.
Yeah, people are going to be always coming to him for appointments.
The residential area, there are
zoning
laws.
Yeah, basically, that's what there is, zoning laws, yeah. The answer is Hochab Mayaskin and Matinokas de Akum. Yes, but you know what the Braita is talking about? It's not talking about a Malamed of Jewish children where he's teaching them Torah. It's talking about a teacher who's teaching Goyish children. He's teaching them math, he's teaching them science, whatever it is. So therefore, yes, in that case, that's not considered important enough that we should override the rights of the Bnei Chaser for that. They have the right to say that it's too much noise and too much of a hassle and whatever. Go move your school someplace else. Tashma, Shnayim Sheyoshim B'chatzer. Here's another braisa. If you have two people living in a chatzer, before we were talking about you have a bunch of people. Let's say, for example, so you have one guy out of ten houses over there wants to become a teacher, and we're saying the other nine can object. Here we're talking about it's just two. It's one against one. And one of them then wants to become a doctor or a bloodletter, or to open that is to open a doctor's office or a bloodletter's office or a weaver or malama tinokas. So again, lechora we see that teaching children is not so important as to override the rights of the other person in the chaser. And again, the answer is, and the answer is again, hachinami b'tinokas da'akum. Again, we're talking about where you're teaching goyish children, which that's not considered important enough. The other person has the right to object to that. The Gaudi, by the way, Tosis points out over here, we're talking about that we're talking about somebody who's a weaver who sells to other people. So again, you have the problem with foot traffic. It was just that he's weaving for his own family, fine, the same way as we said in the Mishnah that you can be hammering in your house the same way you could be weaving in your house. Toshma, Mish Yeshle Bayis Bachatsara Shukvin, yet another Braisa says that if you have a person has a house in a chatzar that belongs to Shukvin, Hariz a loyaski renu, then he's not allowed to rent it out loyal roife, not to a doctor, Veloyla Uman, or to a bloodletter, below the Gaudi, or to a weaver, below the Sofer Yehudi, or to a Jewish Sofer, below the Sofer Amori, or to a Goyish Sofer. Now, here we clearly say a Jewish Sofer. Lechora, a Jewish Sofer is somebody who's teaching Jewish children, and a Goyish Sofer is... The previous Braisa didn't mention that, but this Braisa is spelling it out. We're talking about a Goyish... So we're saying that you can't rent it out even to a Jewish teacher, or to a Goyish teacher. So therefore, Lechora, it seems, even a Jewish teacher, the pastor is a Jewish teacher who's teaching Jewish children, and we're saying it's not allowed. By the way, we say over here, I raise a lawyer, Skirenu. What about, though, are you allowed to sell it to somebody who's going to be doing one of these things?
Or can you do it yourself?
Can you do it? Yeah. So different Rishonim talk about this. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch, the two possibilities. Maybe, indeed, you are allowed to sell it. You are allowed to sell it to them because, fine, you sell it to them. It's their business if they want to open up such a store or not, so a doctor's office or whatever. If they do, the members of the chatzah will take them to Beis Din. You, as the one who sold it to them, are not responsible. As opposed to, if you rent it to them, the Sneh actually brings a different, the Sneh brings a different rationale for that. If you sell a house, he says, not necessarily is the other person going to occupy it right away. The person might be buying it basically as an investment. They'll hold on to it for a couple of years and then flip it. So not necessarily because you sold the house to a doctor, let's say, is he going to right away move in and open a doctor's office there. Mashen, can you rent it to him? For sure, he's going to open his office right there. You don't just rent a place and keep it empty. Therefore, there's more logic there. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that means even if you sell it to them. If you yourself want to become one, that would be the previous price. Echad b'mnei chatzar shebikesh le'ofis, that he himself decides to become a doctor or whatever. Yeah, well, that we said that chaver ma'akav, all of the other people can prevent him. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the answer is hachav ma'iskin v'sofer masa. The answer is that the sofer of our Mishnah does not mean a teacher. It means the the sofer over here means the sofer, the Jewish sofer or the Goyish sofer means sofer masa. Rashi says it means like the Malamed in chief, like the principal sort of. So therefore, he's the one responsible for. He's like the local board of education. So therefore, you have many, many more people coming there all the time for instructions or whatever. So therefore, there is a lot more noise and a lot more foot traffic. So therefore, yes, even that, fine. If a regular Malamed who's going to have a class of a couple of dozen kids, fine. But when you're going to have Sofer Masa, where he's
corporate
sector. Not corporate, but according to Rashi, it comes out like he's the board of education. The local board of education or whatever, that they can be marketed. Tosfos gives a different explanation. Sofer Masa over here means the person who's responsible for writing things for the city, like the person who's responsible for writing shtaros for the city. So therefore, whether he's a Jew or a guy, fine. You know, there's going to be a lot of foot traffic from like this, the city notary, the city department of records. So therefore, yeah, they can prevent that from happening. We haven't gotten to Reish Duchna yet. We're still talking about Sofer Masa. Where did you get Reish Duchna from? That's later on. We'll get to that. Right now, we're at the Sofer Masa, about the middle of the lines in Rashi. Omer Rava. Now that we have this takana of Yeshua ben Gamla, that there are supposed to be melamdim in every city, we do not transport a child for cheder from one town to another. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, therefore, we can force the people of that town to open a cheder over there and teach the children locally. Now, the Gemara is going to soon talk to... Well, that, no, it means, in other words, there has to be one in town. Right. Not necessarily does it have to be in any particular... If members of one or another chatzah complain about it, we said they can't complain about it. But whatever, they can always do it in the local shul or whatever. But that's how Rashi learns that what it means is, if you have, because since the Takana is supposed to be that there should be Malamdim in every city, then therefore if you have children in one city and there's no Malamdim, don't take them to another city, open a cheder over here. However, Tosfos learns a little differently. In a few lines, the Gemara is going to mention the number of kids that should be in a class, and Tosfos understands those numbers to be the minimums, not the maximum. We'll talk in a few lines whether it's the minimums or the maximums. Tosfos learns that they're the minimums. We're going to mention 25 kids. The way Tosfos learns it is, if you have less than 25 kids in town, you cannot force the parents in town to pay for a malamed, to pay for a cheder, to pay for a malamed. So therefore, Tosfos says this that we're talking about over here, that you don't take them from one city to another, would have to be, we're talking about where there's already 25 people, there's already 25 kids in town. However, we can take a child from one shul to another. So if there's a cheder in one shul in town, then you can't force the parents to say, well, we need another cheder, therefore, because it's closer to me or whatever. You just take them to that other shul. However, if there's a river between the two parts of the town, then you don't take the child across, because what if he falls into the river and drowns? The ikatitura, but if there is a bridge over the river, mamtinan, then we can take the child from one to the other. The ikagamla loimamtinan, but if there's only a gamla, Rashi understands that a titura is a wide bridge and a gamla is just a narrow board like you'd have over a small river. Then loimamtinan, then we don't, because it could be dangerous. The Rimigash understands a little bit differently. He says titura means a stone bridge, which is pretty solid, it's going to stand, whereas a gamla is a wooden bridge, which can easily get washed away or rot away or whatever, and then the child might be in danger. But Omar Rava, also Rava says another din as far as Chadarim, Sach makri dardiki esrim v'chamishi yinuki. The total number of children for one malamed is 25 children. So here you have, this is where Tosfos says that we're talking about a minimum. If you have less than 25, no, meaning... But according to Tosfos, it means if you have less than 25 children in town, there's no requirement to hire a malamed locally.
Okay.
You just combine them with children from another town, from another village or whatever, until you have 25. According to the Rambam, rather, it's a maximum. The greatest number of children that you can have one teacher teach is 25.
From Rashi, it's much less than that.
Yeah, minyan tinoka. Well, Rashi just said minyan tinoka.
That's appropriate for one, meaning one shouldn't exceed this number.
Yeah, but you could also argue that maybe he means like Tosfos. That's appropriate for one, meaning less than that is not appropriate for any malamed.
Okay.
It could be understood either way. The Rambam clearly says that, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that it means the maximum number of students for a Rebbe, for a malamed, is 25.
Well, even Tosfos is marked the fact that less than 25 for is a mila. That was the purpose of moving the kids to another masa. You have Chatzai.
Yeah.
He understands that less kids in the classroom is better.
Of course.
So 24, I believe, would be the maximum.
Yeah, okay.
So, but, I'm sorry, 25.
Right, okay. But it's still, no, it's not the minna that if there are two Malamda Shinoikas in the other city, where you could have had half by one and half by the other, instead of forcing the parents to pay for two different teachers, you can just have them all combined together into one class.
So I misunderstood
that. Actually, it's interesting. The Alter Rebbe talks about in Hilchos Talmud Torah and Kuntres Acharon that he says maybe this that we're talking about 25 is that when, for example, we're talking about teaching the kids Chumash at a time when the kids already knew how to read before they came to Cheder, and you're going to teach them Pirush HaMilas either because they know Hebrew, then you can get by with 25 in a class. He says that maybe actually when you have nowadays, you're teaching them Gemara, for example, which is much more complex, maybe 25 is too many for a teacher. However, he says, the fact of the matter is, since it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, this figure of 25, we can't force parents, we can't force a town to support a malamed for fewer than 25 kids. Therefore, he says that this is why originally Takana should have been that the municipality pays for the teachers. But nowadays, by the Alter Rebbe's times, and like we have nowadays, the parents pay tuition. The Alter Rebbe says, why? Mistama, because of that logic, he says, because if we stuck to the figures that it says here in the Gemara, where you actually have one teacher for 25 students, sure, the city is required to pay for that, but since nowadays it's hard to have a class run with that many kids when you're teaching them Gemara, and therefore, of necessity, you have smaller classes, therefore you can't put it on the city to do that, but the parents have to make that.
How did they do it in those times?
So in those times, the city would pay for it. They'd raise taxes from the people, and then they'd... So if you have 50 kids, then you make two teachers. You split it up into two classes. What about if you have 40 kids? If you have 40 kids, Mekminin Resh Duchna, then what we do is we arrange for an assistant teacher. Rashi says specifically what the Resh Duchna does is he listens together with the students to what the Malamed teaches. Duchna. And then Duchna literally means like a Duchna, a platform. So he like stands on the platform and is like an assistant teacher. He listens to what the Malamed is teaching, and then he reviews it to the children to make sure they understand it well. And Rashi also adds that Resh Duchna is paid. And the Gemara says, we assist him from the city, meaning the city is responsible for the salary of this Resh Duchna. Again, you have, here also, you have a machlokas, what it means, the minimum or the maximum, is the Rosh learns that it means that you only need a Resh Duchna if it's between 40 and 50 kids. The Rambam rather learns it means if you have between 25 and 40 is when you need a Resh Duchna. Any more than 40, you should really split it into two classes, but you can get by until, you can still get by barely with a Resh Duchna until you reach 50, and then you must have two classes. V'amar Rava, Haim Mikri Yenuki Degaris, what if you have a Malamed who teaches, he knows the words, the Ikach Rina Degaris Tchfei, not knows the words. You have a Malamed who teaches, he teaches a certain amount, the Ikach Rina Degaris Tchfei Mine, but you have another teacher who is able to teach more, who's able to teach more material during the year. We do not fire the first teacher. Duma Osilis Rashuli, because he may get careless. The second one, Rashi says, because the second one is likely to think, hey, look at me, I'm the greatest teacher there is. And then he's gonna get careless and not teach the children as well, because he's gonna figure that there's nobody better than him and therefore they're not gonna fire him. Yeah, again, different Rishonim have different other explanations, including that it may mean that the first one is going to get careless and say, forget about it, I'm not good as a teacher anyway, so I'm not going to bother reviewing the material, and then he's going to, yeah.
Well, if the first one can't be fired, I'd imagine he'd be lazy too.
If
you find a better suitable teacher...
We're saying, Duma Osilis Ashulik, because then he may just let himself go completely. But Rav Dimi Min Hadar says, on the contrary, Koshikin Degaris Tvei, on the contrary, do fire the first one and get in the second one instead. He'll learn even harder, because famous expression, Kinas Seifrim Tai B'Chokhma. The jealousy among Seifrim, in this case meaning teachers, Tai B'Chokhma increases wisdom. So therefore, according to Rashi, it'll mean that the second one will be all the more motivated to get better and better, because he's afraid that, you know, if I don't keep on improving my teaching skills, then they'll fire me and take back the first one. He fears to be fired in favor of the original guy who he supplanted. And according to the Rimigash, the other way around, the first one is going to be motivated to improve himself so that he can eventually get a job back as a Malamed. V'amar Rava, Hani Tirei Machri Dardigi. Also, Rava says, suppose you have two teachers. Had Goris Vladayik. One of them teaches the children, but he's not Medayik. He's not particular to make sure that they learn without mistakes. V'chad Dayik Vladayik. The other one is very particular. He's very pedantic about all the little details, but he doesn't teach them as much. He doesn't cover as much ground. Maitzvin and Ahu Degaris Vladayik. Better, we should appoint the teacher who teaches a lot, even though he's not being so precise. Because Rava says the mistakes will eventually go away on their own. Meaning eventually the children will, yes, at the beginning they'll be making mistakes and the teacher's not bothering to correct them, he's not noticing, but eventually they'll get to learn it the right way after all. It'll eventually go away. On the other hand, here also of Dimi Min HaDama, no, actually we should appoint the teacher who is more particular, who's more precise, even if he doesn't teach as much, because shabeshta kiven to all, because once a mistake has penetrated, it stays in, it doesn't get removed as easily. And Rav Dimi proves it from a story in Tanakh. Mm-hmm. You have like this. The pasuk says that describes how Yoav went as David's general and fought against Edom. Kisheshes chadashim yashav sham Yoav v'chol Yisrael. Yoav and all of the rest of the Jewish army had remained there for 6 months. Ad hichris kol zachar be'edom until he had cut off all the, until he had killed all the males in Edom. Now, he also came to David. So when Yoav finished the war and came back to David, Omalei, my time at Abbasachi. Why'd you do that? Why only the men?
And not the women.
Omalei, so Yoav answers him, Dichtiv, Timches Zachar Amalek. Timches Zachar Amalek. You should wipe out the males of Amalek. Now here we're talking about Edom, not Amalek. So, okay, different Mephoshim have different possibilities. Maybe the Edomim we're talking about, remember, Amalek is a descendant of Edom. Maybe the Edomim we're talking about over here are specifically the Amalekim. Marshall says maybe that Yoav made a Kavachomer, Madoch, even with Amalek, you're only supposed to kill the men, how much more so with Edom? Yeah. Amalek.
The second one?
That was my shot. Omalev hanan zecher korina. No, what do you mean? We read zecher, zecher. Yeah. Omalev, no zocher akrion. So Yoav says, when I was in cheder, we learned zocher.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So it says.
Yeah. All, yeah, that's the point. That's the point of being how Yoav is making. That a mistake says. Yeah, that's exactly the point. Also, Shaili the Rabbi. So Yoav went and asked his old Rebbe, how did you teach? Omalev, hey, akri, son. How did you teach us the pasuk? Omalev, zecher. So he says,
there's no
Nakudis. There's no Nakudis. Okay. Tosfos on Amud Aleph, Tosfos at the bottom of Amud Aleph, quotes Rabbeinu Chananel that the teacher himself knew the proper pronunciation is Zecher, or Zecher, as the case may be. But when the kids read it from the Sefer Torah, remember they didn't have Nakudis, they read Zecher and he didn't bother correcting them. That is why Yoav ended up being so angry at him and called him Oysim Alechas Hashem Ramiya, that you did Hashem's work deceitfully. Because Tosfos says, if the teacher himself didn't know, he himself thought that the proper Nakudis is Zecher, you can't hold him so responsible, Tosfos. On the other hand, the Ramah says no. The Ramah, so Marsha brings it, that no, it may mean the teacher himself actually thought the Pasuk says Zecher.
And therefore,
that he's still called Oysim Alechas Hashem Rabiya, because if you know that you don't know the psukim as clearly as you should, what are you doing being a Muhammad? Get another job.
That's right.
Yeah.
Who is the other opinion?
The other opinion is Tosfos that the teacher knew the proper pronunciation is Zecher or Zecher, but he didn't correct the student.
It seems like that from Rashi as well. I'm saying on Amud Aleph.
I'll tell you, by the way, there is an interesting verse that I saw on this, by the way. We all know the famous thing, do you say Zecher, do you say Zecher, or Meneg, say both of them in Bishalach and in Kisese. I don't know what Sfaradim do, but I think it's mainly among Ashkenazim. Sfaradim don't really distinguish that much between Seira and Segel anyway, but it's an interesting one of the recent Bali Amasur, Mordechai Breuer, has a whole article about this, claiming that there really isn't any solid basis for saying both, that it should be Zecher in both places. Anyway, one thing is, he says, maybe what happened over here is like this. Maybe the Melamed was not such a total Amoritz that he thought the word is Zecher, or that the kids said Zecher and he didn't correct them. Maybe the vort is like this. You have words, he says, in Hebrew, where the main form of the word has two kamatzes, but when it's nismach, it has two segels. In our parasha, for example, you have vayal ashanay ke'eshen hakibshan. The word for smoke by itself is ashan, but when it's nismach, the smoke of, then it becomes eshen. So maybe what happened then, he says, is maybe the kids, either the melamed or the kids, as the case may be, read zecher, and therefore made the mistake of thinking zecher must be the nismach of zecher. As opposed to, if they had read it correctly, Zecher, then they wouldn't have made that mistake.
But then
it would mean Zecher Amalek, according to that. It would mean the males of Amalek.
It's
an interesting chat. Anyway. Shokol Safsir al-Mikhtalei. So Yoav picked up a sword to kill this Malaman for what he had done. Amalei Amai, so the teacher says, what's that for? Amalei, so Yoav says, Dichtiv, you have a pasuk that says, Oru Oysim Alechas Hashem Remiya, cursed is the one who does Hashem's work deceitfully. You did it deceitfully by being careless like that.
Who said he can take his sword, though?
Amalei, so the teacher says, Shapkilahu Gavra, the Lekum Ba'oru, fine, then leave that person, meaning me, leave well enough alone, fine, I'm subject to Oru, I'm subject to a curse from the Eivishter, don't make it any worse. Amalei, so Yoav answers, yeah, but the pasuk continues, and also cursed is the one who holds back the sword from blood. So meaning, in other words, that this oru has to be punished. Or, wait, Marsha says a different nuance in it, that Yoav is saying, you, because of this carelessness, you caused me all this time that I was in Edom to be Menea Chai Remidam, that I didn't kill out the women like I should have, and to deal.
Pasuk saying that cursed is he, say Yoav in this case,
yes,
for not killing the teacher.
We're saying that the teacher is Oru because you caused me to be Oru, that you prevented me from.
And what gives someone who is Oru, causes someone to be Oru, the right to kill that person?
So that's if we say that Meinei Achav Midam also means, in the simple sense, that the one who holds back his sword from dealing with this kind of Oru. So, Ikadamri Katli, the Ikadamri Le Katli. So now there's two different versions of what happened. Did some say he killed him, some say no.
Okay. Strange story at face value. Any insight here?
That's on face value. If he caused a terrible thing, that now there's people of Edom left, especially if it was a Amalek, then yeah.
Torah tells us what what offenses are subject to capital punishment. And
I noticed that he got the next two psukim right, even though he got Zecher Zecher wrong.
Right, exactly.
He was able to kill him.
The point is,
Jimmy's point is well made. We get that. But in this story.
So where is Yoav getting that he should be able
to. For details here.
Right.
I'm
so where is Yoav getting that
he should be killed?
The Pashtus, he's learning that since the Pasuk is saying V'orimineach Habimidam, then that's what it means. That in a case like this, then you can't hold back.
So you don't go to a Beis Din, you don't ask a Rav, you don't do anything.
Not when you're a general.
There is a concept.
You don't go to school reunion.
There is a concept.
Martial law.
There is a concept. You know, there is a concept that a king can judge people outside of the normal.
Yeah.
Yoav is not a king, but he's the next to the king. He's the general of the.
Okay.
Maybe he asked David for permission the first time. Maybe he went up. Maybe he went to David.
He would get you too.
Okay. Onwards. Va'omar Rava. Next. Va'omar Rava. Makri Yanuka, a Malamed, Shasla, somebody whose job is to plant vines, and then he and the owner of the vine split the proceeds. Tabcha, a Shochet, Umna, and an Uman. So again, over here, Rashi explains that Uman means a bloodletter. When we had this Gemara in Bava Metzia, Rashi explained there that it meant a moil. The Sofer Mosa, and the Sofer of the city. Here Rashi explains that the Sofer is the one who writes. Here Rashi explains that the Sofer Mosa means the Sofer who writes Sefer Torah or whatever.
Right.
Tosfos rather explains that it means the one who writes Shtoris, either Shtoris between individual people or Shtoris for the city.
Why?
All of those things because Tosfos. Well, wait. But here, where we have Makri Daudiki, obviously, can't get. Kulan Kamusrin Va'im Ninin. All of these people are considered forewarned in the sense that if they mess up, they can be fired without further notice.
I mean, say they're going to be killed.
No, but we're saying that, yeah. Klola de Milk. Klola de Milk. Klala de Milk, the general rule is, Kopseda de Lehoder, any case where it's an irreversible loss, Musra Voimid, who then you're considered forewarned, and therefore you can be fired on the spot. So this is what brings Tosfos to say. If you're talking about a Sofer, so he wrote a Sefer Torah, so there's mistakes in it. Big deal, you correct the mistake, it's not an irreversible loss. That's what leads Tosfos to say that we're talking about he's the Sofer who writes Shtari. So therefore, if a Shtari is written improperly, it's an irreversible loss. Different other Rishonim talk about maybe Rashi could answer, for example, let's say you could have cases where Sefer Torah is written with mistakes in a way where it is uncorrectable, there's too many mistakes, there's a certain kind of mistakes that can't be corrected. All these cases, though, the point is, so how do we have, how is each of these an irreversible thing? So in the case of the teacher, Rashi in Bava Metzia says the reason is because, again, the teacher teaches the child something wrong, and now the child is going to keep that mistake forever like Yoav did. On the other hand, Tosfos says, wait a minute, this is Rava talking over here. Rava is the one who said on Omar Aleph, Shabeshta Mimela Nafka, he argued with Rav Dimi, that so what, the kid learned it first with a mistake, eventually he'll learn the right way. So Tosfos rather answers that the pseudo de lehoder, the irreversible loss, is meanwhile the teacher taught them something wrong. That time can never be gotten back. So that's the Makri Yanuka. The Shasla is because Tosfos says he planted the vines or trees or whatever it is in such a way that they're never going to grow properly. They're never going to produce as much food as they should. Therefore, it's an irreversible loss because you don't know how much they would have produced if he had done a good job. A tabcha of a shoychet if he makes the animal strafe. And then some of the Rishonim also explain the vort is, even so let's say you could argue he can pay for the animal, but imagine, for example, he shefted an animal for somebody who needed meat for a party, and now it turns out the animal is trafe. Now the poor guy is embarrassed, he has nothing for his guests. And Umna, again, whether he's a bloodletter or whether he's a moil, obviously he can do irreversible things. And the Sofer Masa, we said before.
Malpractice.
Yes, malpractice, yeah. Omer Avuna, Hai Bar Mavoya De'oike Rechaya. Suppose you have one person in a mavui who sets up millstones. He wants to go into the milling business. But also Bar Mavoya Chabre V'Kamoik Gabei. And then another person from the same mavui comes and sets up another mill nearby. Where he's going to be taken away. Same mavui. There is a machlokes that's showing him, is he allowed to, this that he's going to say that you're not allowed to do it because you're preventing my livelihood, does it apply in the same chotzer or not? Maybe not, because the fact is both of them live in the same. So here we're saying mavi. Dinahu d'ma'akba ilave. The din is that the first one is allowed to prevent the second one from setting up his business. because he can say you're cutting off my business. You're like this. I would have had all the customers, and like this, you're competing and you're taking away business from me. Gemara says lema masayale. Should we say that we can support this din from the following brisa? Machikim mitzudas adog min adog tum lo ritzas adog. You have to keep away a fish net, a fish trap from the fish. You have to keep it away kim lo ritzas adog, as far as a fish can swim at one time. So what are we talking about? In other words, Rashi says like this: you have, let's say, one particular fisherman has been looking after one particular fish. He wants to catch it. And so he goes, he tracks this fish, and eventually he figures out where the fish's hole is, where its nest is. So he tracked it down to there. Now, this first fisherman has not caught that fish yet. Nevertheless, the other fishermen are required to keep their nets away a certain distance from that area. Vakama, how much is kimloy ritzas adog? Omer Rav Bar Rav Huna ad parsa. They have to keep it as much as a parsa away, because that's how much a fish can swim at one time. There's various other explanations of what's exactly going on over here. There's a Tosfos in Kedushin that talks about it, that says that maybe we're talking about over here. The first person, actually, what he did is he took one dead fish and put it into the river in order to attract other fish. And therefore, and now he actually did something to make this his exclusive area. Other fish are going to come from as much as a parsa away. Therefore, other people are responsible for keeping their nets further away. There's a variety of other explanations among Rishonim.
So we're equating a mavi to the share of ad parsa.
We're saying, in other words, that like this, you have to stay away once the person has set up that he's going to make his parnasa in this way. You can't take it away from him.
How large would a mavi be?
Mavi is like a side street. It's a side street. Yeah. I don't know. That wouldn't be a mavi. That would be a Rosh Hashanah. A mavi would be maybe like Malbone Street or something. Like Malbone Street, maybe.
So that it's not subject to the Sherman antitrust laws.
The answer is shiny dog and the Yahavi Sayara. The difference is that there's a difference between these dinim, because when it comes to fish, the fish look out ahead. Sayara means like looking out. So Rashi explains that the fish habitually come to places where they find food. So once you put food in the fish's hole, in the area where that fish usually is, and you know, therefore, that fish is going to come from as much of a parasite away to get that food, and you're therefore pretty sure that you're going to catch it, Rashi says, so therefore it's practically speaking in your hand. So the other guy is already being mazik you. Here, on the other hand, fine, you have your customers, I'll have my customers. I'm not necessarily taking away customers from you. Again, there's different other explanations among Rishonim what exactly Yahavi Siyara is. The Rimigash says that sometimes you have like a large fish may sort of send little fish ahead as scouts to see if there's any danger up ahead. So if they see a trap over there, then they're going to stay away from the area. So therefore, I have my trap over here. You're going to put your trap nearby. The scout fish is going to see that other trap. It's going to stay away from the area. Therefore, you're preventing the fish from coming to my trap. As opposed to, again, with two millers, there's not that issue. And neither one is necessarily preventing customers from coming to the other one.
So it's a different halacha.
Yeah, exactly. It's a different situation.
But they're both not allowed. Right?
No, so the difference
is...
We thought to make it a proof. What we're saying, it's not necessarily a proof. It is true that in both cases it's not allowed, but it's not exactly tied all right.
And the reasoning would be different. Right. What's the reason?
That's what I'm saying, because by fish, necessarily when you put down your trap, you're going to be preventing the fish from coming to my trap. Or, according to Rashi, I actually... Yeah, it's close to Zela, yeah.
A mavi, it's just... what's the halakha here? What's the term? I forget.
So it's a hasagas gvul, it's called. But yeah, the different mafoshim talk about, actually, is it technically a violation of loisafsa gvurach, or is it just a more general thing of causing hezik or whatever? Yeah. What?
Like be chivalrous?
Should we say that this din of Rav Huna about not having a competing mill, in the same mavri, should we say that he agrees with Rav Yehuda in a Mishnah in Bav Matthiah? Ditznan, Rav Yehuda, a storekeeper is not allowed to give out dried, toasted grain or nuts to children who come to his store, because then he gets them used to coming to him whenever their fathers send them to the store. They're always going to come to him. He's taking away business from other people. Where does the Chachamim say it's mutter? Now, the halacha is like the Chachamim. So how would Rav Huna be saying like Rav Yehuda? The answer is afilu tamei rabbanon. You could even answer that what Rabbuna is saying goes according to rabbanon. Ad kan lekligu rabbanon alei de Rabbi Yehuda Hasa ella. No, the reason why the rabbanon are arguing is because they're saying not necessarily is my giving out treats to the kids taking away any business from you at all. Ano kamafagina amguzi. Fine, I'm giving out nuts. Atplug shivski. Fine, if you want to have the kids come to you, give them almonds. Or Rashi says over there in Bava Masir, give them plums. Rashi says over here, yeah. Shivski means almonds. Over there, he says it means plums. Whatever, the point is, fine, you can find some better treat to give the kids. And maybe, I think the Rav Mishra from the Parashim would say it's apricots, yeah. Whatever it is. So therefore, in other words, there's no reason to think that it's any kind of anti-competitive practice at all. Whatever, yeah, you can do the same as I'm doing. You can do even better. But over here, even the Rabbanon might agree that you're not allowed to do it, because the fact of the matter is, whichever customers are coming to your mill are not going to be coming to mine, and you don't really have a way of enticing them to come to you. Adults, come on. So
you can give out a bonus candy, but you can't undercut up someone else.
Well, I mean, you could, but eventually, what are you going to do?
You lower the price,
but eventually, what are you going to do? You know, you're going to start a price war. You know, you're going to end up selling it at a loss.
Because you're taking away.
No.
And still business by being competitive.
No, there's a certain amount. You can be competitive. Actually, in the Mishnayos over there, also at the end of Hazahav in Bava Metzia, it talks about over there, there's a machlokas. Are you allowed to lower your prices? So that you have your machlokas in the Mishnah over there, whether you're allowed to or not. Chacham would say, Zachor Latov, because fine, you lower prices, it makes it easier for the buyers.
So what they say here, the same thing.
So over here, fine, you can lower your prices, but in Bava Metzia, in Hazahav, yeah. But there's a limit how far you can lower your... So what are you going to have? You know, I'll grind for $1 a pound. I'll grind for 90 cents a pound. I'll grind for 80, you know. Eventually, you've got to stop somewhere. So, as opposed to nuts, fine. You can always, you know, you can keep a supply of nuts behind the counter. How many nuts is one kid going to want already? You know.
After the Depression, under the AA laws, you know, undercutting certain industries was a federal offense.
That's because they figure that you can have price collusion, you can have price fixing, you can have a bunch of storekeepers get together, set one price, drive everybody else out of the market. Right. Yeah. Indeed. Okay. To be continued tomorrow, Beth Hashem.